Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. Tonight, our episode 212 is brought to you by Audible. If you're a fan of audiobooks, folks, go on and check out Amazon Audible. It is one of the coolest apps out there. You get all kinds of great books, everything from mystery to sci-fi, all kinds of categories. And you can try it out for free with the code DUDESAMBEER. So visit audibletrials.com/DUDESAMBEER. You'll get your free 30-day trial of Audible. You get two free downloads with that. Whenever you buy a book at Audible, if you don't like it, you can actually trade it in. It's pretty sweet. So stop by, check it out, audibletrials.com/DUDESAMBEER. With us tonight is hands down one of my favorite guests that we ever have on the show. Dr. John Hall is joining us this evening to talk about the long history of the U.S. government experimenting on the American people. Typically, whenever we have Dr. John Hall on, we're talking about his chosen profession, which is either stem cell work with genetics, or we're talking about his other work that he does in the realm of electronic harassment, being the author of the books Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, as well as A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism. But tonight we're going to talk about so many other experiments, so many other things other than technology that the federal government has done and continues to do on a regular basis when it comes to basically violating human rights and experimenting on people without their knowledge sometimes and on occasion without their consent. So welcome once again to the show, good doctor.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Doing great. Oh, yeah, and David Metcalf is here, too.
Howdy.
Hey, David Metcalf.
Well, hey there, Chris Jordan and Dr. John.
So welcome back to the show, doctor. It's always great having you on. Lay down for everybody some of the atrocities you know of from the government just in the work that you've done.
Well, I'll tell you what, that my second book, Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, the first two or three chapters kind of go into non-consensual experimentation by the government. And that was done very intentionally, because as I got into the more exotic stuff involving mind control and, you know, extremely low frequency waves and using the electromagnetic spectrum as a weapon, in order for people to understand that, yes, all these targeted individual people who are voicing complaints of being targeted are probably at the root of it, guinea pigs of government experimentation. And the only way I could get there in convincing my readers of that was to point out the fact that it's been done before with other things. So anybody that picks up that book, for the first several chapters, you're going to read about non-consensual experimentation perpetrated by the American government around the world, not just here. And you can look at those references in the back, look them up yourselves. Most of that came from Freedom of Information. So, I mean, it's legitimate. And, you know, the reason I wanted to start the book out that way is when you start talking about the public being experimented on the government, most people go, well, you know, there's all kind of laws. You know, look how long it takes a pharmaceutical company to pass a drug through and all the rules and regulations with experimentation and informed consent and, you know, institutional review boards that have to be staffed in order to get a drug through. Well, that's a private company. And private companies, they do put a lot of roadblocks in front of them for their research. But when you're talking about the CIA, the NSA, and the DOD, there's no such roadblocks. And just so your listeners know, the only person that I know of that actually tried to pass legislation making informed consent a requirement for any government-funded experimentation or private experimentation that's partially funded by the government was John Glenn. When he was in Congress, he actually did try to pass that through Congress, and it got shot down. because the powers that be understand that there's a lot of this experimentation that they do that is so atrocious that it can't be passed through an institutional review board, even if they have willing participants. So, so that's why for anybody that reads Guinea Pigs, you're going to have a real eye opener, because a lot of it's stuff that the average citizen, unless they're kind of into this already, or, you know, are listening to mostly conspiracy theory shows and things, or which are turned out that most conspiracy theories have some smoke behind the fire. You know, it's gonna be shocking.
Well, yeah, and you know, it is shocking. Even whenever you stop to think outside of the box in the world, things get shocking rapidly. I mean, a prime example of that, folks. I work a lot of AI conferences, but if you remember a year or two ago, Microsoft put an AI out on Twitter. That basically built its personality off of what it read on Twitter. And within a day, this bot that was supposed to be like a 16-year-old young lady became like a crazy racist ranting person. it just totally evolved from reading Twitter, and that's what it became. And it became this angsty, angry person that was totally racist and like a neo-Nazi. It was absolutely crazy. But seeing this kind of stuff and realizing that that's how fast it happens is the important thing to see. The fact that these things snowball so rapidly, and even when you're dealing with technology, it snowballs so rapidly.
As your listeners know, I'm a physician too.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of what I mentioned in the book too are some of the medical things that went on. I mean, obviously my books are about mind control and using the electromagnetic spectrum for surveillance and things like that. And that's the direction I eventually go to in the book. But some of the experimentation I start off with goes back to, you know, a lot of the early medical experimentation, Nazi experimentation that got imported here, aerospace technology done by the Nazis that got imported here, and even before then. So,
well, and that's, of course, where most people's minds would go whenever you say that there is no law that prevents the government from doing this. They're going to be like, well, no, I mean, there's the Nuremberg Code, you know, that came out after the Nazis, you know, to prevent
and things like that again. And I hear that every lecture I give about non-consensual experimentation. That's what I hear about the Helsinki Accord and the Nuremberg Code.
Yeah.
And people go, well, we've got those, you know, those laws. I'm like, those are not laws. They're suggestions. You know, they're not even international law. They're international suggestions.
Yeah.
And it's really up to each government to whether or not they actually implicate those suggestions and the laws. And in the United States, we haven't. So,
yeah. And what's really interesting is when you go through, and I linked a few articles, one from NBC News that goes through a great array of different research that was done. Of course, there was the Nazi experiments that they talk about. But whenever you scan down on it, it starts talking about the AP review of past research. And, I mean, just to start off, was the 1942 injection of experimental flu vaccines in the state of Michigan that exposed tons of people to the flu. There were numerous experiments that went on in prisons, and some of these were even injecting prisoners with diseases, things like that, to see what would happen to them without their consent. And the reason they did it was because they were cheaper than monkeys.
Yeah, and that's exactly. And if you remember, there was even a lot of the early radiation experiments was done on prisoners, where they took prisoners and injected radioisotopes into their testicles to see, you know, for one, if it would sterilize them over time, and two, how long it would take to give them testicular cancer.
Yeah.
Same thing. They floated radioactive iodide clouds over New Mexico and Arizona, specifically Phoenix, where you're at right now. No, I'm teasing you. And but that it was in that area to see how many people would actually come up with thyroid cancer.
Yeah.
They floated clouds of Serratia marcescens bacteria and a type of E. coli bacteria over the Bay Area of California. The Navy actually did that to see how many people would come down with what they were hoping would just be a low-level upper respiratory infection. The problem when the Serratia marcescens got into the atmosphere and commingled with other bacteria, it mutated to become more virulent. And they actually, you know, they claim they had no deaths from it, but there were a lot of people that turned up in ERs, especially elderly people or people that were immunocompromised with severe pneumonia and pneumonitis from that. So, I mean, it's something that's gone on all over. And as a matter of fact, when I was, it's been 5 or 6 years ago, when I was at one of the meetings up in Washington, D.C., when, if you remember when Hillary Clinton had to apologize to, I believe it was the Guatemalans, yes, for us experimenting on their prisoners and on some of their people with weaponized syphilis and weaponized gonorrhea. Well, when that all came to light, now that happened in the 50s, as I recall, but it didn't come to light till a reporter brought it up. And then Hillary Clinton, when she was in state, Obama was president, had to apologize for it. Well, they started a series of ethics boards. There were 5 or 6 of them that they had, several in Washington, several in other places. And I went and spoke at one of those boards. And mainly I was talking about electromagnetic weapons being used experimentally, because what the board was tasked with finding out, is there any current non-consensual experimentation going on that's funded by the government? And of course there is. So there was a bunch of people that showed up to talk. I was one of the people. I got to go and show my papers and speak, and mentioned how there's, you know, 100,000 or so people voicing complaints of electromagnetic targeting and using the electromagnetic spectrum as a weapon. And they listened, but there was an interesting cat there that sat in the front row. He got there an hour before anybody else did, got a seat in the front row. He was a little cowboy from Utah, I believe it was. And the story he had was horrifying. His family owned a cattle ranch there, multiple generations, and apparently in the 80s, his military planes sprayed his ranch and his cattle. They have pictures of this. You know, it was multiple days of spraying from military planes. All the cows developed brain cancer. He developed brain cancer. His wife died of brain cancer. Both parents died of brain cancer, and he was currently fighting a fatal form of brain cancer. And he went in front of that board pleading for them to find, because the DOD would not ever tell him anything, pleading with that board that even though he would be dead before they come to a conclusion, that if they could find out or get somebody to admit what they sprayed that ranch with, that basically killed all of his family and 2 generations of his family.
Yeah, and I mean, to marry that with the same thing in Nevada under the Clinton administration, when they had to come out and admit the fact that Area 51 existed.
Because, well, and Clinton also had
a lawsuit for getting sick because they were burning materials at Area 51. There was like a huge trench dug that was like a half mile long and like a story deep that they would just fill with classified materials and burn. And everybody who lived around Area 51 was exposed.
Well, if you remember, Clinton also had the Aker hearings. Mm-hmm. And that was to bring light to the radiation experiments. And the interesting thing, and the reason I bring that up in my book, is for the most part, these targeted individuals, at least until what happened in Cuba, but before what happened in Cuba, pretty much were all referred to as the tinfoil hat people. Yep. These are all crazy people that think their microwave is getting them, you know, and think that, you know, God's beaming voices into their head and blah, 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 blah. Well, the interesting thing, that's the same thing they told the people dying of thyroid cancer during the radiation experiments, because those people were showing up at their doctor's offices, losing weight, losing hair, getting sick, and were told that it was hysteria, or it was bipolar, manic. And, you know, it wasn't until the Aker hearings in the 80s when all of that came to light and they got material from the DOD and from the CIA and from the NSA, and that had to force them all to admit that, yes, we had experimented on the public with radiation in the 40s and 50s. And that's what I even wrote in my book, that I was hoping that with the electromagnetic targeting, that it wouldn't be one of these things that, you know, if I live to be 80, all of a sudden I have whoever is the head of state or State Department secretary coming forward to, you know, apologize to everyone that was experimented on in preparation of the control factors that we're going to have, you know, with electromagnetics and 5G and everything else that's come. As a matter of fact, MIT recently came out and said, yeah, we can put voices in your head. We've got two different ways to do it.
Yep. Yeah. And I was telling David about that earlier. I mean, Defense One came out with an article talking about the new laser technology that vibrates your skull and, you know, can put a voice in your head and make you hear things, deliver a message directly, was the exact terminology used.
Well, and even in California, they figured out about 5 years ago how to let you watch a video, and then they would tell you to think about the video you just saw. And they can decode the part of your brain that's thinking about that video and put it back into a visual form. So if you're thinking about watching an airplane land, you know, they can decode it. And, you know, what the people who are decoding your brain see is an airplane landing or, you know, a bit of a TV show that they have you watch prior. And that's all in the private sector, which runs about 30 to 50 years behind the government. So, I mean, you can only imagine what the government actually already has.
Well, and I mean, I posted an article today, as a matter of fact, where there is a new bill being put forth by a bunch of people. And let me look it up real quick. Let me hop on. Folks, if you ever want to check out any of these articles, feel free to hop on to Facebook, Fakebook, whatever you want to call it. But go join the Dudes and Beer group. It's free. Great conversations and tons of articles like this one out of Channel 7, KTBV. Boise residents sue the Air Force over proposed training above Idaho cities. There's a prime example. As long as anything is done under DOD or anything like that, they can absolutely run their training exercise, spraying whatever they want into the sky, because it's a military exercise.
And that's always been the defense. It's always been, well, it's in the realm of national security. When Sidney Gottlieb had to actually testify in front of Congress, you know, the defense was, well, it was a matter of national security. We knew we were destroying people's lives, but, you know, it's for a greater good. So, you know, and as you know, Sidney Gottlieb and all of the psychiatrists involved with MKUltra, you know, none of them went to jail. None of them had fines. None of them lost their licenses. And they all died with glowing eulogies about their contribution to science.
And their service to country.
Yeah.
And one article that I actually dug up today that I hadn't seen in a long time, but it crossed my mind, and I was like, I remember it being there. And it came out in 2015 through FOIA requests. I remember in 2012, we caught wind of it on air whenever I worked with AJ, and we talked about it, but it was one of those, like, it's there, but it's not there. But FOIA requests were filed, and they came out in January of 2015, and you can find this on eelegal.org, folks, but simply Google EPA illegally used children as guinea pigs in diesel exhaust experiments. They put kids in rooms and exposed them to diesel exhaust and tested their mental abilities before and after. Because, yeah, you know, diesel exhaust might be bad for your brain. You know, like, what kind of jackassery? I mean, you're a doctor.
Well, there's
I'm sorry. I'm raising my voice. I'm getting carried away. But you're a doctor here, doctor. What kind of science is that?
that's typically the science that the government does. If you look at a lot of their stuff, it's like that. I mean, you know, the hepatitis vaccine that we use now for hepatitis B, you know, the way they discovered that is at Willowbrook School, they injected, you know, children with various forms of hepatitis, you know, until they were able to isolate kids whose serum would, develop antibodies against it to develop the vaccine. You know, and that went on with, there was a bunch of stuff that was done on children's homes that had mentally disabled children. Willowbrook School was one of them. Yeah, universities in Canada were used. McGill specifically was used a lot for MK Ultra type experiments that were funded by the CIA. Prisoners were, matter of fact, some of the latest experiments on prisoners was done at the prison in LA County. You know, they actually mounted millimeter wave weapons to the ceilings there where the guards could actually zap prisoners with millimeter wave, which is the same thing as the active denial system that the military uses on a Humvee that they had mounted in little pods and cells so they could experiment seeing if they burn these prisoners' skin with millimeter wave, how long it would take to actually separate them if they were in a fight.
Yeah. And what you're scanned with at the airport.
And a lot of what you read about experimentation, you'll find all the stuff from the 40s and 50s and 60s and all the way up to, you know, the 70s with MK Ultra and the 80s with the Aker hearings. But it actually keeps on going. If you keep looking, there are pharmaceutical companies that, you know, that had government grants that, you know, made sure to do their research, you know, out of country. And, you know, and the weird thing with Canada is, you know, and you should get Stephen Shellen on your show to talk about this. You know, he's, you know, Stephen Shellen. Yeah, because he knows a lot of, because he's been in Canada for a long time now. And he'll tell you, it's almost like kind of sold out their people to the CIA to begin. As a matter of fact, it's just recently that there was a bunch of MK Ultra survivors in Canada finally, CIA and the Canadian government, for basically offering them up as guinea pigs.
Yeah.
Because the Canadian government has never tried to stop the CIA from doing experimentation there. And currently, all of these Canadian diplomats that were down at the Cuban embassy that got basically attacked with electromagnetic weapons recently, they're all suing the Canadian government because the Canadian government, basically, at least the American government's making it look like they're trying to help these people or get to the bottom of it. Canadian government just brought them home and said, oh, yeah, well, it looks like you got attacked, you know, and they've really gotten no care, no answers. Government's not even saying they're looking into it. Now, our government is saying they're looking into it. Of course, they know what happened because it probably wasn't the Russians or the Cubans that attacked those people. It was probably our CIA. And but that's also why they put a gag order on them. And I know there's a couple of those victims have gotten their own personal lawyers to try to get to the bottom of it. But it, at its core, that is still non-consensual experimentation because that's still where we are with those types of weapons.
Yeah, precisely. And that's just it. Like this experiment that I was talking about, the quote that's in here is from the executive director of CFACT, which is Citizens, where'd it go? Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow is what it is. It's an environmental legal foundation. And as their founder and director said, EPA and its researchers have perverted science and morality in using children as guinea pigs in what amounts to pseudoscientific experiments. And for those of you who are wondering, folks, this is not a FOIA request that came out from like the 1970s, something like that. It's past 40 years. People are dead. We can let it go. This study was funded by the EPA through USC and UCLA between 2003 and 2010. This was a seven-year-long study. This wasn't something that just popped up, cropped up, and was chopped off because it was like, yo, that's crazy. Who funded that? They had to apply for this funding annually. Like, they had to produce some kind of result. And I don't know what other result you're going to get with diesel fumes in children or any human being other than, hey, that's not good for you. I don't know. Like, how you even go about funding that or getting funding for that is beyond me.
You do it through black ops and EPA. I mean, all of those government agencies actually, to some extent, have their own dark funds. And if you were, it's not uncommon for them to go through legitimate universities for part of the research as well. If you remember MK Ultra, a lot of that was done through the University of Texas system.
Yep.
A lot of it was done through the Texas Christian University. And one of the worst experiments there was the CIA went around to people who were poor that had twins and offered to pay off their homes in exchange for, you know, them letting them experiment on their twins to study twin behavior. And they messed these people up. I mean, Colin Ross is a buddy of mine who actually works with the Center for Psychological Trauma up in Dallas. And he's worked with a lot of these MK Ultra victims. And some of them that, you know, were there's one lady in particular who had a twin brother who actually later in life committed suicide due to the trauma that he was induced with at TCU, where there was a doctor there who was experimenting on kids, twin, you know, children,
yeah,
for MK Ultra. So, I mean, it's all out there and it's all in freedom of information, you know, requests that have come straight from the government. You know, especially in MK Ultra, if for anyone who's interested in that, if you want to read a really great book on it, read Colin Ross's book, Bluebird. And I mean, it goes through a lot of atrocities committed by psychiatrists in this country.
It's interesting that you bring that up, or the previous topic rather, because there is a new documentary that just came out on Hulu that my wife and I watched called Three Identical Strangers. And if you remember back in the 80s, back in the Phil Donahue days, these dudes like made the circuit on talk TV. This guy went to college for his freshman year. He had taken a year off in between high school and college, and everybody on campus recognized him, but they were calling him by a different name. And come to find out, he had a twin brother. They were separated at birth by this adoption agency, by this Jewish adoption agency. And then come to find out, they had another brother. And these guys, like, completed each other's sentences. It was absolutely crazy and wild. But they'd grown up for 20 years apart. Come to find out, they had been watched when they were children. There was footage of them, and like they started having recovered memories where they were like, oh my God, yeah, I totally remember when I was like three, these people would come by once a year with a video camera and like videotape me playing games and doing tests and stuff like that. And these people were literally separated on purpose to see what would happen to them. By you know, like the twin bond, like what would happen to these people that have such a strong bond if you separate them via distance and time? And it's like, oh,
well, and
that is wicked evil.
Well, and one of the experiments that I know for a fact happened because I knew some of the people involved with it, but when the CIA, even as, you know, it would have been 79 or 80, was actually still continuing with some of their paranormal research and psi ability research. It was kind of a continuation of Stargate. And they were looking to see, you know, what, and I don't know how they determined which neighborhoods to go to, but, and you can talk to a lot of victims that'll tell you this story. And it been, the reason I know the story is because it happened is two friends of mine, but they would actually come into some of the, you know, lower middle class or poorer neighborhoods, and they would rent a home that was vacant, and they would watch the kids play for a couple of weeks, you know, and kind of give the appearance that these look like they're neighbors that have moved in that are there to stay. And then once they kind of identified, you know, whose kids were whose and where they played in the street, then they would, you know, kind of pull the kids in and run them through some real basic psi experiments. And if you talk, and I have talked to a number of people that this happened to, and including two of my friends that grew up in the neighborhood where I was, and got basically called in and said, hey, we just need you guys to come in. We're not going to kidnap you. We're not mean people. We're just doing a study. And they would, I know in several cases, they sat the kids down and they put cards in front of them and they tried to have them identify cards you know, without seeing them, you know, psi type experiments. And they would ask them to visualize what they saw in the backyard. Well, without looking, you know, what do you see? If you, you know, there's a swing set back there, do you see the swing moving? Is there anybody on the swing? You know, is there a dog in the backyard? You know, and it was all remote viewing and psi type experimentation. And it was done all over the country. I mean, it wasn't just in one neighborhood. It was done in multiple neighborhoods countrywide. And you can, you know, read report after report after report on that particular experimentation. And that would have been probably 78 to 80 that that was going on. And I remember it being done vividly in my neighborhood, you know, because, of course, you know, what would happen is they would pick one day where they were going to do that, bring as many kids as they could in, do the experimentation. Well, by time the kids ran home and said, there's this weird people in this house asked us to come in here and sit down, and they made us look at tarot cards and identify the cards they were holding without looking at them. Well, of course, first thing, you know, the parents go down to that house to see what the hell is going on. Everybody's packed up and left. Yeah. So, I mean, it just, no matter how far-fetched and how weird something may sound with the United States government as far as their non-consensual experimentation, the more crazy it sounds, the more true it probably is.
Yeah, and that's what's actually the most bizarre thing about it. One of the articles I posted today was from AHRP.org. That is the Association, or I'm sorry, the Alliance for Human Research Protection. And it's an article from the Associated Press from 2005 talking about a lawsuit that the AHRP filed on behalf of children in New York City foster care who were being experimented on with AIDS drugs. And having drugs tested on them. And it, the funny thing about children is they can't supply consent, like, in any way, shape, or form legally. So that means somebody in the foster care system at some point had to actively sign a document saying, yep, cool to give them these meds and see what happens to them. And
well, and the foster system is state-controlled at one level and federally controlled at another. So... And you got to remember, too, I mean, when people go, well, you know, like you were talking about, you know, the EPA. Well, you got to remember there's a lot of little subsidiaries of those federal agencies that the CIA will create. So it kind of looks like it's the real thing, but it's actually a government agency. And one of the big ones during MKUltra was the Ecology Fund. So they would do a lot of this non-consensual experimentation through groups or created institutions that kind of look like they're doing something that's for the good, you know, Ecology Fund, right? I mean, want to save the planet. We all want clean air and, you know, so, you know, Ecology Fund. Well, then when you dig a little deeper, the Ecology Fund was where the money was going to fund several different sub projects of MKUltra. And if you looked at, that's the way the government hides the research a lot. And the reason we know that is the only reason we know as much as we know about MKUltra is because when they shredded the documents, the one building that they didn't get the documents out of to shred was the financial building. So we found the financial records for MKUltra and could trace those back to where, what institutions the money was going, what cover institutions were being used. And the Human Ecology Fund was one. There were several other that were kind of psychological sounding names, but there was a whole host of basic front companies like NQTEL, people who, you know, NQTEL is, it's well known now that they're a venture capital firm to the CIA. And all you have to do is pull up NQTEL and look and see what does NQTEL invest their money in.
Yeah.
And you'll bring up a list of companies that's unbelievable. And all of that CIA money.
Yeah, yeah. And for those that don't know, here we go. I am literally pulling up their website right now. Their tagline for their website, it is Bridging Technology, Venture, and Intelligence. That's their tagline, folks. And whenever you go to their art history page to check them out, you know, they talk about NQT is the not-for-profit strategic investor that accelerates the development and delivery of cutting-edge technologies to national security agencies. Our work bridges the gap between the challenging technology needs of our government partners, the rapidly changing innovations of the startup world, and the venture community that funds those startups. That's
so instead of the military industrial complex, it's the intelligence industrial complex. You know,
right?
But you know, you can also, if you dig around on that side enough, you'll find the companies that they work with.
Niantic, and you'll the people that made Pokemon Go, Facebook, Google, YouTube.
All of the favorites you use every day.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Family names. May as well say Kleenex. Now, I want to get a common person's perspective here. Not that I'm not a common person, but I'm definitely somebody who has spent quite a bit of time researching this stuff, especially with the job I had on broadcast. But, David... Well, we were talking earlier whenever I met you before the episode, after I'd sent you a bunch of articles, you were like, yeah, I'm in my car and I'm getting to my Lyft on the way over to the hotel right now. And I was like, here's some reading for the vehicle. And I sent you a link to all of these articles.
Totally memorized, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but, I mean, aside from your fantastic memorization skills, what struck you about that?
I think part of it, one of the things that caught my eye, especially, I think it was the first link you sent that talked about they were using children, and the minute I saw that, I literally, my stomach just flipped. I was like, I'm gonna puke in the car, because to me that's just heinous. It's not something you do. It makes me wanna. Rip through. I just get violent. I just want to kill somebody. I don't think that's right. I don't think that any of that. A human life is a human life, but especially a child, you don't do that. I don't have any sympathy for what happens to that person that does experiments on a child. Zero.
That's the calmest I've ever heard that said.
Because I think I'm in a small environment, and I'm not going to yell it out here.
Yeah, I know, right? But I mean,
you know, as I continued to go through the leaks, I was amazed at some of the other ones, and we touched on this earlier in the program when we started about the prisoners. And part of me, and this is, listeners, please don't hate me for saying this, but part of me was like, oh, they're prisoners. And then I started thinking about it, and I had to take that back. I was like, now, wait a minute. Even the most heinous criminal, and, you know, you and I talked about this, too.
We did. Go ahead.
Hey, you've got a triple life sentence or something mm-hmm. like that. I still, there was part of me that wanted to go, well, yeah, go ahead and experiment with them. They're not going to go anywhere. But it still comes down to it's a human life. And I don't think it bothers me to know, because I feel like the stupid one on the conversation right now. And, I didn't know that any of this really, honestly,
that's the idea
that any of this is going on.
That's the reason this exists.
And I had, you know, and I think there's a lot of us that have, thoughts about these things go on and we ignore it, or we let it go under the rug, whatever, what have you. But the one thing that we both said was, you know, if you do have a triple F sentence, yeah, I have a triple F sentence. Why don't you go ahead and experiment on me? I'll be able to donate my body for this. I'm not going to get out of here anytime soon. So I think if they had said, hey, do you want give us your consent? We'll do this. Then yeah, go ahead and dope them up, whatever. But to sit there and go, we're just going to experiment on prisoners, we're going to experiment on children There's a special because
they're
place
cheaper than monkeys.
Yeah, that's just not.
Because they're cheaper than monkeys.
There's, you know, rats populate at a very rapid rate, so let's use them to build.
Right?
One of the things I wanted to ask Dr. John, though, and this is just me being a little bit, I'll be honest, a little bit ignorant on this. He started talking about the electromagnetic so forth, and Chris, you touched on this with the airport. For those of us that travel, those of the listeners that travel a lot. I mean, is it possible? I mean, I'm sure it is possible, but how much of it is going through the airport at those security stations? And when you're getting scanned, when your luggage is getting scanned, our backpacks, our computers. I mean, I carry two headphones with me. I mean, my phone's going through there. So how much of that with the electromagnetic and everything how much of that is possibly coming into us that the government's giving? Does that make sense? Does that question make sense the way I'm wording it?
Well, and that's one of the things that they're, you know, like with the rollout of 5G, you know, that's being rolled out without any real studies on exactly what the detriment, you know, that it's going to be long-term to basically 24/7 exposure to electromagnetic radiation. At that point, you know, like if you're asking how well can they follow you around, and once 5G is on board, then if once you're tagged to be watched, you're basically the cursor on your Google map.
Yeah.
You're
wading through a sea of waves at that point, and your disturbance of them is what tracks you.
Yeah. And there'll be no escaping that. And they've done no long-term studies on that. Europe is finally kind of starting to say, well, maybe we should hold off on rolling this out because we don't know what it's going to cause. And bottom line is the targeted individuals that I've written about probably mostly were the guinea pigs for the rollout of 5G because a lot of it has been extremely low frequency and millimeter waves that they've been exposed to. And now for 20 years, because a lot of that's, I mean, some of the first people I interviewed that were legitimately affected as targeted individuals were Utah prisoners from the 80s.
Yeah. And that's just it. Much like our computer technology with the whole concept of Moore's law and the fact that every 6 months speed and density of transistors on a chip doubles. It's very much the same way with other technology. What we're exposed to and what we're given is far behind the time. And to answer your question a little bit more, of revisiting what you were just saying about the EU and their studies, Doctor, just before our last episode that you were on, when we were talking about specifically the dangers of 5G, the EU had actively just passed new legislation saying that they were going to be phasing out the use of millimeter wave scanners at airports because of the documentation from the American FCC at the time of the patent filing that showed millimeter wave frequencies cause glaucoma and cataracts in lab rats and in lab animals. So, this is a known danger. FCC filing when they were like, hey, here's the thing that we'd like to get patented, FCC.
And I don't know if you remember, if you ever saw, there was a freedom of information request that came forward. I was called the addendum to the effects of non-lethal weapons.
Yep.
And they even had one of the generals said, well, before we use this in the theater of war, we need to experiment on our own people with it to see what problems it may cause. Because they went on to talk about using the ability to put voices in an enemy combatant's head to confuse him or make him think he's gone crazy, or to communicate with hostages without the hostage taker hearing. I'm still convinced that's actually how they shot those pirates. That abducted that captain because he knew exactly when to duck when they fired on those pirates.
Yeah.
And I think they probably, I mean, he got the little whisper, you know, from afar. So
You remember back in the day, right after that announcement was made, when Iraqi soldiers were just surrendering en masse?
Yeah, using that, where they were using S-Quad for that, yeah. And
throwing hands up, like, hey.
Because they heard Allah tell them to surrender. And that one, that was Dr. Lowry's Silent Sound Spread Spectrum, or S-Quad. And it worked well. As a matter of fact, the Marines didn't have enough slip ties to slip tie the prisoners together, so they to their hands together, so they slip tied them to each other.
Yeah,
but yeah, they disassembled their weapons, got on their knees and disassembled their weapons.
A human centipede, as it were.
Yeah.
Sorry. I had to. It was there. But it was right. It was just lobbing over the plate. Those are the disturbing things, folks, because these things are developed for theaters of war. That's what they're developed for. When we're talking about weaponized syphilis that we were using on prisoners in Mexico, when we're talking about the effects of psychedelia on an unwitting public, as was done by the CIA and in the MK Ultra experiments to a whole town in Canada. And just so you know, look it up. There is a crazy connection between the CIA and the Army and the Department of Defense in Canada. They have a beautiful relationship when it comes to keeping secrets, having projects, having aircraft built, all kinds of stuff. We do all sorts of things over north of the border with our friends up there, and it is completely
well, and specifically with two universities there, and that's Laurentian and McGill. And the scary thing, McGill was where a lot of the MK Ultra experimentation was done. And then we get Obama. Obama starts the Brain Initiative and the Nudge Squads figuring out how to psychologically nudge people's decisions one way or another through social media. And that's why you have to be real careful who interacts with you on social media, because it may not be an individual. It may be a group of individuals sitting at a government office pretending to be an individual. But a lot of the Brain Initiative research is being done at McGill as well.
Indeed. Doctor, I can't thank you enough for coming on, for joining us. I know you have a busy day tomorrow. Being an anesthetist, you have people to put to sleep. You have people to take care of medically. So I don't want to keep you too long. David, before we go, do you have...
I would like to give one quick shout out.
Go ahead.
One quick shout out to my guys at Texas Tech playing right
Hell
now.
Yes. Hell yeah. Guns up.
I'm not even at Texas.
But don't burn your town down.
Yeah. So, David, one last question for the doctor before we let him go.
Oh, way to put me on the spot.
You're welcome.
I started thinking about some things. I was watching a documentary a while back, The Men Who Built America, and it had to deal with...
I love that show.
I know, and I've only... The bad part is I've only watched one episode, so I need to catch up. But it was so interesting because it had Carnegie, it had J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, and all these guys. And then... I do have a point to this. I am going somewhere. Dr. John, you said that we are about 50 or so years behind the government of what they're doing or something like that, I think. I'm misquoting you.
Research, yeah.
So my question would be this. If they're doing stuff now, if they were doing stuff in the 80s, they're doing stuff in the 70s, take it back to even the 40s, how far back... someone like myself who doesn't study this in the extent that you guys have, and probably a lot of the listeners are just sitting here going, this guy's an idiot, get off. But I apologize.
We were all as uneducated at one point.
Well, that's true. But how far back does this go? Does it go into a few centuries back? Does it just go until, we finally discovered electricity? I mean, where did it start? And I know that, I don't want to get into a whole another 2-hour topic, but the short version, I guess.
You mean as far as the electromagnetic stuff?
Well, as far as a lot of the experiment to where they actually had anything. How far back does a lot of this stuff go?
The Korean War. The whole stage was set during the Korean War. They found that some of the soldiers that had been POWs and taken by the Chinese, that the Chinese had developed ways to actually control their mind and turn them into Manchurian candidates, or a trigger could be used to change their personality and then have them do something under a different personality, where once they were switched back to their alternate, their true personality, they wouldn't remember doing it. And the CIA took a lot of interest into that, because, and we've actually done that using, it was done using basically forms of torture to create alternate personalities, and using hypnosis to give people alternate personalities. And they actually experimented on using a former female CIA agent who they basically gave her a trigger that converted her to her alternate personality. She took an empty briefcase that was supposed to be a bomb and planted it into a bathroom in a restaurant. Once she came out, they gave her the trigger, brought her back to her real personality, and said, well, we gave you the pseudonym Jane Doe, and you just buried a bomb in this restaurant. And she argued to the death about that. She was, first off, I'm a former CIA agent. There's no way I would use a pseudonym like Jane Doe. And you can't do that to me through hypnotic suggestion alone. And then we showed her the video. So, but basically that's when a lot of it came to light, was when it was really a race of national security. Once the Chinese had shown that they could actually create Manchurian candidates, then the CIA wanted to be able to do that, and for good reason, so we could send our own assassins out. You know, and if I can convert you to a different personality, I can send you to go do anything. And when you get caught, as long as I switch you back, you're going to deny it to the death. You'll go to prison believing you didn't do it.
And just
for instance, you know, the guy that shot up that movie theater in Colorado, when they arrested him in the parking lot, he asked why he was in an outfit and why he was there.
Yeah.
So.
Not just that. I remember shortly before, not the last episode you were on, but before the last to last episode you were on, Doctor, my most recurring guest, folks. I love having Dr. Doctor on. I could talk to this dude like every
day
of my life. Yeah. Yeah. You're like my stomach herpes. I'm never going to get rid of it.
In a good way.
Yeah. I love it because you are such a wealth of knowledge in this area. And one of the things that I posted up today was actually from history.nih.gov, everybody. And that is actually the National Institute of Health. And to go a little bit deeper into what you were asking there, David, what I posted was a timeline of laws related to the protection of human subjects. All right? And it starts with antiquity. The first one is the Hippocratic Oath. Doctor, did you take the Hippocratic Oath?
Oh, you all do, right out of medical school.
Fantastic. After that, 1938. So between Hippocrates and 1938, we really didn't give a shit.
Yeah, you know, and that is, you know,
it was the Food and Drug Act. That was the first time where it was like, okay, you can't just say something does something. You got to be able to prove it. Like, you can't say this will cure your rheumatism, and it's like tincture of mercury, you know? You can't do that anymore. That's how we got rid of snake oil salesmen in the world.
Well, don't think that a lot of this stuff doesn't have deep-seated roots in state and federal agencies, because
absolutely,
the Tuskegee syphilis experiment The Georgia Medical Board was in on it. Yep. The CDC was in on it. I mean, that's why, you know, like in, in my area of practice, I do pain management. And, you know, right now we're dealing with the opioid crisis, you know, because people are overdosing on heroin laced with Chinese and Mexican synthetic fentanyl. Well, we've got to control this. So what do they control? Prescription opioids, which really increases in prescription opioid deaths really isn't that high. Most of it gets lumped in with the heroin overdoses. So it's been artificially made high. Well, the CDC has come out with these new guidelines for opioid use for chronic pain. Well, if you've had 5 or 6 back surgeries and you've got chronic nerve pain running down your legs and you've tried the injections and you've tried stimulators and you've had multiple surgeries, well, the only thing left for you to actually have any form of a daily life is opioid therapy, narcotics to relieve enough of the pain to where you can actually go about your daily living activities. And now the CDC has actually got doctors so scared to write for them that you're going to have your license revoked or have a criminal charge, that it's just nuts. And the last group on the planet you really should stock that much faith into is the CDC. You know, same thing with the American Diabetic Association. You know, it had a lot of funding through the NIH. You know, the diabetic diet is the worst thing you can be on as a diabetic. So, you know, the research is really just, it's not there like you think. You know, and the CDC actually put a mandate out for, and the Georgia Medical Board for those Tuskegee syphilis guys, you know, they were actually, you would go to an emergency room with signs of tertiary syphilis. They would look up your chart. It would say government experimentation, and you'd be denied care. So, it has a lot of tentacles and they go very deep.
Yeah. And like we've shown tonight, folks, once again, these articles that I spoke about this evening, I posted them on Facebook for a reason. It is so that I don't lose them. I've actively sent them as an email on a document to myself to make sure that I can put them into the episode post online so that people can see what we're talking about. These are not isolated situations. These are not situations that happened once and we went, oh, my God, stop the monsters. All we did was build a new closet. Every single time the monster popped out and went Kool-Aid Man on the closet door and busted in and said, oh, yeah, all we did was build a new closet and everybody collectively shoved his ass back in there. So the question for me, the question for my audience, the question for you, doctor, is how do we, as a people, how do we, as a society, start to bring people to accountability? How do we start to change this tide to where we can actively, much like the people of Boise, saying, hey, we don't want you to do experiments and military maneuvers over our city. So we're going to file a lawsuit against you to make sure you can't, like, you know, practice air combat over our city.
You know what? And in order to change that and to change a lot of things, it's going to have to be governmental change. You know, we unfortunately, and that's why a lot of people have complained about my book, Guinea Pigs, that it's more of a political book than it is about experimentation. Well, that's because the answer is going to be political. As private sector folks and common folks, you're never going to have the money to be able to build yourself a jammer that can jam the, you know, electromagnetics that are coming at you, or an anechoic chamber that you can live in where you'll be protected from everything. You just can't, you know. You're not going to have the financial ability. But we do have the financial ability to go to the polls and actually get some more ethical people in government. Term limits, you know, so you can't have the same people spending 40 years up in government that are just going to go along with whatever the intelligence community wants them to go with. And we need outsiders in government that are going to hold the intelligence communities accountable and have more, you know, Rockefeller commissions, you know, more hearings like that to expose that, because that's what it takes. It's going to take Congress people with morals and with ethics, and they'll have to be outsiders that plan on only being there for a term or two. You know, because if you move to Washington thinking you're going to, well, I'm going to spend the rest of my life being a congressman, you're going to go with the flow and you're going to cater to special interest. So, I mean, is love or hate Trump? At least he's an outsider, and that's why they turned the entire intelligence apparatus against him to try to either keep him from being elected or get him ousted once he was. And love him or hate him, when you see that, you know you're on the right track. He may not be the right personality for it, but we need outsiders in the presidency. We need outsiders in Congress, not the same old congressional people making the same decisions that are against the public.
Well, and I've said for a long time, and you know this, Doc, I'm all for a full-on reset. Let's just hit the hard reboot, and let's go back to the concept of Benjamin Franklin, where, you know what, representatives don't get paid. If they do get paid, they get paid by their local constituency, and they get reimbursed for their travel and their time there while they are away commensurately compensated for whatever their job is, be it a field tender or a doctor or a lawyer. But what was not intended ever was the concept of being a career politician. That was never intended in the founding of our country, in the founding of our documents, and in the way our government works. A career politician, it was never intended, nor was the full-on intent of corporations sitting alongside government workers to write law.
And that's where it's going to take a very strong president that who comes from just a commoner's background. It's not, you know, as well as Congress people who are willing to change those rules.
Yeah.
And kind of screw themselves a little bit in order to do it. And I mean, I would say, you know, maybe four terms. Four terms is plenty. No pension after that. Four terms, then you get to get out and scratch the earth for a living the way the rest of us do.
You serve four terms, you can retire. That's cool. You can retire and you can get paid for life, but there's none of this like getting paid from a federal coffer. And you serve half a term and you get paid your salary for life. And you get like your awesome federal health benefits. How about whatever you pass for us for health benefits? That's what you get.
That's where people really have to watch out.
But that's what you get.
Because right now people are so disgruntled with our current political system that they're seeing socialism as a viable way out. And I guarantee you that's not. I've got family members in Venezuela. Trust me, it's not. You know, all that does is it concentrates the corruption at a very small peak in government. At least when it's spread out over the entire government, like ours is, there's pieces of it that you can change a little bit at a time. Once you go the socialist route, then all you're doing is sharing the misery, not the wealth.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Doctor, thank you so much once again for joining us tonight. David, thank you for joining us as well. We have these conversations all the time, and I was so happy to sit here and watch your expressions as the doctor was really laying a lot of things down and putting out a wealth of knowledge, as he always does.
And Dr. John, I look forward to reading your guinea pig book. Soon. I was actually at the top of the program. I was actually trying to download it, but I couldn't get on my Amazon account because I can't remember the password.
Well, that's all right. It's very easy to do, folks. If you want to get Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, or A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism by Dr. John Hall, feel free to visit dudesinbeer.com/store, # shameless self-promotion. That is where you can actively buy the books. I ordered two copies of Guinea Pigs today to send to people myself because it was like, you know, I've had people asking about it. I've had people wanting to know more about it. And it's like, I'm of the means right now. I will pass that knowledge along. That's one of those books like Illusions by Richard Bach that I'm now just going to keep a copy of. And when people ask about it, I'm going to go, you know what? Here you go.
Right.
Here's you a copy. Like, I don't do it with the Bible because I'm not that pushy. But I would definitely do it with guinea pigs. Because
and I appreciate it. And, you know, and if anybody goes, if anybody says, I don't believe this, have them look the references. Check the references.
Yeah, that's it. Like, all you got to do is look at the back of that book in the index, and man, it's there. It's there.
I can't wait to read that book. I never thought I would actually say something like along that line, especially with this topic. And Chris, you and I have talked about this.
I know.
But yeah, Dr. John, I'm pretty stoked to get that in my hands and spend a few
hours. And I appreciate you guys being on. And I know you need to turn your TV on right now because it's 68-68 in overtime.
Ooh.
Yep.
All right.
Guns up.
On that note, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to the Dudes and Beer podcast. Hey, you know what? Wait a minute. Promote your movies. You have movies coming out, Doc. Like, he's a lecturer. He's a doctor. He's an anesthetist. He is an author, and he's an actor.
But can he do a handstand?
Yeah, we've got Death and Compromise is a TV series that we're doing for Roku, and it's in post-production now, and it's about Texas after the passing of the Compromise of 1850. I play an outlaw in that. And all of these have Facebook pages, so Death and Compromise. Just finished shooting another Western called Showdown on the Brazos, and there's a clip out for that on its page, a teaser. I play a blacksmith in that. I've got another TV series we're shooting out of Houston called Vixens and Villains by a guy named Torian Williams that should be really good. I'm actually playing, not playing a cowboy in this, but I'm actually playing a kind of a corrupt cancer research center CEO.
Oh, no.
And then of Myth and Legend, the story by Leon Brumby that's about Billy the Kid. And I play Colorado Jack Slade, guy that tries to kill Billy the Kid and ends up getting killed. But Villains and Vixens, Facebook page, has a Facebook page, Showdown on the Brazos and Death and Compromise. So
nice. Yeah, I'm always down with promoting anything that my guests do because everybody that is on this show is such an individual and so creative.
Why we're at it, then people can go to Stick Horse Rodeo and see my music videos too from my band.
Oh damn!
What?
Band?
I didn't. You never knew I had a band. Yeah, it's called Stick Horse Rodeo.
Man, why have you not been on hashtag shameless self promotion again for both of us?
I know.
Why have you not been on the Talking Sound podcast?
And we do have a couple of songs that have made it into soundtracks, and nice. We've got some videos on the Stick Horse Rodeo Facebook page.
Do you know Dr. Gregory Danger?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you need to meet Gregory Dr. Danger Carpenter. He is one of my guests and a good friend who is actively a stuntman in the Austin area. He will be setting me on fire, folks, for my 45th birthday.
I have gotten
permission from my wife to be set on fire for my 45th birthday.
Yeah.
Coming up in August, and you are officially invited, Doctor.
Cool. I'd love to see that.
Be my death.
I'm the only one laughing.
The conditions were these. There were three. Number one, not in the face. Number two, apparently I have a good face. I don't know. Number two, you cannot be injured so much that you cannot work. Fair enough. Number three, the event must be live streamed.
I'm so coming to Austin.
But the only problem is you live in Austin. You're going to have to find a place environmentally that will let you do it.
That's so true.
Absolute truth. So you heard it here, folks. Get ready to tune in to your host being set on fire. I challenge any podcast host out there to top that. That's my challenge to all of you right now. Set yourself on fire. That's not my advice. I'm not. This is not a call to action. This is not a call to action, all right? But I'm here to say, I got you. I got one up on you. I'm setting myself on fire. And I don't know what's really cooler than that in my life, like, other than wiring explosives before.
You know, set yourself on fire in August in Texas.
Yeah.
That's not the brightest thing I've ever heard anyone say.
I didn't say it was a smart idea.
Well,
but
that's true.
The funny thing came about when I was sober. So once again, Doctor, tell everybody where they can go to check out the awesome movies that you have coming out. And everything else?
Everything's on Facebook now. Showdown on the Brazos Facebook, Death and Compromise Facebook, Vixens and Villains on Facebook. So,
and of course you can buy the good doctor's books, Guinea Pigs,
Amazon, Barnes and Noble, yeah.
Satellite Terrorism, a new breed, Satellite Terrorism. You can find those on Amazon. You can find them on the Dudes and Beer store, dudesandbeer.com/store. While you're online, check out all the great episodes on Dudes and Beer, as well as our other awesome HC Universal Network family episodes on the HC Universal Network at hcuniversalnetwork.com. While you're online, also check out the great products at diamondcbd.com. You can save 30% on all your purchases there with the code DUDES420. Until next time, everybody, Dr. David, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.